we will open the hearing of the House Committee on Health and Human Services on February 2nd, 2005. We will have a series of public hearings on four bills that are listed on the agenda. These are just housekeeping bills, statutory cleanups and language. There's nothing earth-shattering here, so I think that we'll have somebody from Legislative Counsel's office or several folks come in and explain to us why we need to make these changes. So appreciate your attention this morning. It shouldn't be a very long meeting. So with that, I will open a public hearing on House Bill 2243 and invite Holly Robinson to help work us through that. Good morning.
Good morning. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Holly Robinson from Office of Legislative Counsel. By way of background, the four bills that you're going to be hearing briefly today are changes that our office built up minor errors in the RRS that we felt were too substantive to go into what we call the revisers bill, which is the bill that handles primarily grammar changes and other things. We also strive to make the RRS perfect, and because that's rather a huge task, the bills that you're going to see in front of us are a very small effort to make it perfect. House Bill 2243, as it says, abolishes the Genetic Research Advisory Committee. There, additionally, when there were statutes being, or when the subject of access to genetic research and information was initially presented to the legislature, they created the Genetic Research Advisory Committee. That was subsequently replaced by the Advisory Committee on Genetic Privacy and Research, which was a slightly different committee, which still exists and is codified in statute. But the underlying and initial committee, the Genetic Research Advisory Committee, was never repealed. Part of this, in fact, has to do with the way that we have started changing our drafting a little bit to make sure that temporary committees go away. We had a tendency to create them and not get rid of them when their tasks were done. And so in this case, the Genetic Research Advisory Committee completed its task. One of the things that it recommended was a more permanent committee. The more permanent committee came in, and the original committee never went away. And that's the point.
Comments? Thanks very much, Holly. And we have Catherine Bradley from the Department of Human Services Office of Family Health signed up, so I invite you to come up and testify.
Thank you, Chair Dalto. My name is Kathy Bradley, and I'm with the Office of Family Health in the Department of Human Services. And actually, I just would say that I would echo what was just presented to you, and I don't think there's a need to take up your time to repeat the same information. It's there in testimony for you, so unless there are any questions.
Great. I don't think so. Thanks very much. All right. Colleagues, we're going to bring this these four bills back in work session shortly, but I think we're going to try to follow Representative Jensen's lead and avoid scheduling work sessions on the same day of public hearings just to give a little time for issues to flush out if necessary. So we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2243, open a public hearing on House Bill 2244, and we'll invite Charlie Cheek to introduce us to this measure. Good morning. Welcome.
Good morning, Chair Dalto, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Charlie Cheek, Deputy Legislative Counsel, and I'm here to explain House Bill 2244, which is a little bit different than the circumstances that Holly described for you. House Bill 2244 repeals ORS 677-475, which is an obsolete statute dealing with the physician's role in treating intractable pain. What happened was in 1995, the Assembly addressed the question of intractable pain in anticipation of Measure 7, the Death with Dignity Act. And it set up two sort of scenarios, one in which the statute would go into effect if the act passed, and one if Measure 7 had not passed. But if you know Measure 7 passed, and as a result, ORS 677-474 became the law in terms of regulations regarding physicians in treating intractable pain. Prior to that, 677-475 had been enacted in that session to deal with intractable pain, with the proviso that if Measure 7 passed, 677-474 would act in lieu of 677-475, but it did not repeal 475. So since 1995, the rules and regulations in relationship to the ability of a physician to treat intractable pain have been controlled by 677-474, and 677-475 has simply been carried on the books because there had been no authority to remove it and repeal it. It is not in effect. This does not change the operation of the law at all. It simply removes something from the statutes that should not be there. We do not believe in legislative council that we have the authority to simply editorially remove a statute from the books, even though another act makes it is enacted in lieu of it and makes it obsolete. We feel that that is up to you as the body to take the action to repeal that statute.
Thank you. Comments from the panel? Representative Greenlee?
Yeah, I have a question. Good morning, Sean.
Good morning.
How are the words of 475 different than the words of 474?
I believe, and I did a quick read-through on it, I believe that the primary distinction, Chair Dalto, Representative Greenlee, is in sub 2 of 474, where it says that a physician should not be subject to disciplinary action by the BME for prescribing or administering controlled substances in the course of treatment of a person for intractable pain with the goal of controlling the patient's pain for the duration of the pain. 475 sub 2 says the physician should not be subject to disciplinary action by the Board of Medical Examiners for prescribing or administering controlled substances in the course of treatment of a person for intractable pain. I believe that's the distinction between those two.
Other than that, they're basically redundant.
They are, and I think the distinction, of course, is that under the Death with Dignity Act, a physician may administer the same types of medication they use to control intractable pain for the purpose of the act. And that language conflicted or raised the question about the position.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Jensen.
I think I understand the position, whatever we want to do. I just have a curiosity, a question as to whether the statute, should be a kind of an either or. If A, then B. If, C, then D type of thing.
I'm Chair Galta, Representative Jensen. I'm not quite sure if I understand your question. If you're asking a policy choice in the current existing law,
I'm asking in terms of the statute that in. I mean, this is all based on the passage of the Death with Dignity initiative.
Yes, sir, that's correct.
That was there. Now, in light of the fact that that's a thing that can move one way or the other, by future actions of the people or the legislature, if they have nerve enough to try to override the people again, if it wouldn't somehow be appropriate to have this particular section, that if Death with Dignity or whatever that statute is in play, then this, if it is not, then the other.
I understand your question now. I think that the result that you're describing wouldn't be the case anyway. This provision that currently is still in small print in the statute cannot go back into effect. The prerequisites for 677-474 to take place or become operative occur. It's the law. Should the people decide to repeal the Death with Dignity that would not automatically revive 677-475. So as part of that process, the legislature, if it chose to, could come back and readdress the question and amend 677-474 to reflect the changes they desire to be in place.
Yes, I understand.
Yeah. So even if the circumstances...
Mr. Chair, I understand it wouldn't come back in.
Right.
But my question is, could it not be written so that it could come back in play if the Death with Dignity Act were repealed? And we don't have to let
Several points. I would strongly recommend against that. I would suggest the policy choice be made as a whole. That's my response to that.
I've been informed that you never argue with your attorneys.
Wouldn't want to argue with my client.
I will, it was just a curiosity point. That's fine. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Any other comments or questions? Seeing none, we will close the public hearing on House Bill 2244. Thank you, Mr. Chief. And we will open a public hearing on House Bill 2251. And we will invite Doug McKeon to work us through this one.
Members of the committee, I'm Doug McKeon from Legislative Council. I'm the Deputy Legislative Council. House Bill 2251 just does one thing, and that's to repeal ORS 240.391. What that statute does is define a severely disabled person. Until 1997, there was a series of statutes that dealt with the employment of severely disabled persons in state employment. And in 1997, that series, with the exception of the definition, was repealed. So all we have left is a definition that defines that term just for that one section, and that section doesn't do anything. The assumption in 1997 was that the Personnel Division, which now calls itself the Human Resource Services Division, would come back with a bill to recreate a different new program for hiring persons with severely disabled persons. They did come back with a bill. It was Senate Bill 274. That bill did not pass. A similar bill was not introduced in 2001 or in 2003. We think that this definition in 240.391 is obsolete and should be repealed. Mr. Chair.
Questions? Comments?
Yeah.
Representative Greenlee.
Good morning.
Good morning.
This refers to a definition of severely disabled in 174.107. It says it's defined as it is in that section. Is that section still there?
Mr. Chair and Representative Greenwood, that's true. And that's a very small definition. It's very similar to the definition in the Americans with Disabilities Act. And then this definition takes that a little bit further and because it focuses on severely disabled. So the definition in 240.391 is much longer, much more detailed than the simpler definition in 174. Definition 174 is one of those definitions that applies to the definition of disabled person throughout all of ORS.
And another question. And you're sure that there's not some other section that refers to this definition? So you'll have an orphan section without a definition?
I'm certain.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Yeah. Is Department of Human Services still using a definition in 240.391?
Mr. Chair, the answer I think is no. They have developed rules regarding the employment of what they now term individuals with substantial disabilities. So they have a hiring program that requires limited competition for persons with substantial disabilities. So they have a program in place. If they are relying in some way on ORS 240.391, it's not apparent because they don't use that phrase anywhere in their rules.
Okay. Okay, thanks very much. I note that we have an individual signed up for public testimony. Ellie Denny, did you want to come forward? Okay. All right. Looks like you had your question answered. So thank you, Mr. McCain. We will close the public hearing on House Bill 2251, open a public hearing on the House Bill 2054, and invite Holly Robinson to introduce this measure to us.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2254 does the following things. There are a series of statutes that allow public nonprofit providers, community providers, to access liability insurance to the state because they're basically doing a state function. In this statute, there was a reference to a child care center defined by the Department of Human Services and a private child caring agency. Some number of years ago, before my tenure here, all of the responsibility for child care centers were that moved from the Department of Human Services to the Employment Department. And this was a reference that for which the change did not get made. And so there are no child care centers now that are defined by the Department of Human Services. They're all defined by and licensed by the Employment Department. And so all this does is make the statute accurate, which is what we want.
Thank you. Questions, comments, Representative Greenlee?
No, I'm just thinking, they're really picky, aren't they? They're picky, picky, picky.
It's a long intern. Holly, thank you.
That's too
cruel. Accurately cruel.
Bruce Bishop, did you wish to come forward?
I think you better ask for amendments in a fast turnaround.
You didn't have anything to do in the interim either.
For anybody.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Bruce Bishop, appearing on behalf of the Oregon Association of Treatment Centers, commonly known as OATS. OATS is an association of about two dozen community-based nonprofit centers that provide intensive treatment services for severely disturbed children throughout the state. We're here to ask that you consider an amendment to House Bill 2254. Legislative Council has described to you what the bill would do, and it is making technical changes, but on Monday, when I was less stuffed up than I am today, I testified to you generally about changes that are going on in the children's mental health system.
Sure.
President Butler.
First question sounds perfectly normal to me.
Is this okay?
I apologize for
Thank
that.
Thank you.
It's a building condition, I believe, but I'm not sure. We talked generally about the changes that are going on in the children's mental health system. There have been significant reductions over the last several years in the ability of day treatment programs to serve mentally ill children. Slots that the state has funded for these services have been reduced at the same time that the costs of providing services are going up. House Bill 2254 is an example of one of the small, relatively easy steps that you can take to help these programs keep their doors open by extending the same liability coverage that's available to local public bodies to these nonprofit organizations. Residential treatment programs already have that coverage, and we would request that the committee consider extending that coverage as well to the day treatment programs, who are also intensive treatment providers and are largely serving the same kids with the same level of mental illness, but serving them in their homes because they're able to stay in their homes rather than needing to be in residential placements. So we would ask that the committee consider an amendment in that respect, and would be glad to work with you if that's a possibility.
Thank you. Comments? Seeing none, thank you, Mr. Bishop.
Thank you.
Colleague, do you have a perspective on that? Or?
I just have one question.
Sure. Yeah. Should we stand at ease for a moment?
Mm-hmm.
We'll stand at ease for a moment. We'll stand at ease for a moment. And I think that Mr. Bishop is going to work with the Legislative Council to see about an amendment, so they'll come back with language. So with that, we will close the public hearing on House Bill 2254. Is there anybody in the audience that wishes to come forward on any issue? Doesn't look like it. So anything, colleagues, for the good of the order? No? Enjoy the rest of your morning. We'll adjourn this hearing.
Dr. Anderson says he's seen a dental clinic.
Or two.
Going to